I forgot my headphones, but I don't know. For the record, just if you introduce yourself to begin with.
Okay, hi, my name's Ken Hensley, and I am formerly of Uriah Heep. I was the keyboard player and the main songwriter throughout the 70s, and now I'm here in Helsinki, and I'm playing at the 20th anniversary concert of our fan club here, and playing solo concerts all over the world, and play with my band Live Fire, and luckily, every now and then with my dear brother Trevor.
Right. And you're Trevor.
Yep. Hi, I'm Trevor Hensley. I'm Ken's brother. I'm also here to take part in the 20th anniversary of Fan Club from Finland. And I'll be playing a little, doing my own material, doing a couple of songs with Ken. And I'm just very happy to be here. I'm part Finglish because of what happened to me in January 2013. But yeah, very happy to be here.
Right, we spoke of healthy issues, and as you said, we now move to the unhealthy business of rock and roll, mostly. This is kind of a cliche, I guess, but I have to ask. Uriah Heep, of course, is considered one of the pioneers of hard rock, even heavy metal, perhaps. But how do you actually look at this in retrospect?
Well, yeah, we were definitely pioneers because we were part of a movement in the late 60s and early 70s where people were fed up with boring pop music and people with ties and short hair. And we went in exactly the opposite direction. And so we were definitely pioneers in terms of loud rock music, whether it was pop rock or hard rock or whatever you want to call it. The heavy metal thing came later, and yeah, I probably still actually to this day don't understand what that means. But that's okay. People can call it whatever they want, death metal, thrash metal, heavy metal, black metal, dark metal, you know, whatever they want to call it. It doesn't make any difference. It's all songs to me. But it was exciting because, you know, we were all, none of us knew what we were doing. Us, the managers, the record companies, the agents, nobody knew what we were doing because we were doing something completely new. We were playing loud music in a very loud way and just being very rebellious. The key to the whole thing, which not many people talk about, is the timing. Yes, we did our job very well and we worked very hard at what we did, and some of us were very good and some of us were not so good, but the timing is critical. Post-Vietnam America came right at the time when a new generation of young people was growing into awareness, and they looked around at what was available musically, and there was no energy in it. It was just all schmaltzy pop music. They wanted something new. We brought that something new at exactly the right time, both in Europe and in the US. And so it was that post-Vietnam period that brought about this cultural change and a generational change in young people. So we were very lucky in that respect. We were there at exactly the right time. So we caught that energy from all these young people all over the world, and that's what made our brand of rock and roll a global success.
That's interesting. I was thinking about another aspect also of your style of rock, which is the ingredient of fantasy in your early work, or Uriah Heep's earlier work. Was that it's more like the innocent fantasy stuff, not so vicious as Black Sabbath had their wizards also,
yeah.
But they were perhaps
more symbolism, I think, than fantasy, because they took religious artifacts, for example, and icons, and used them to express a very dark message. If you look at my songs, most of the messages are light messages. They are messages of hope, their messages are complete positivity. It's easy to write dark messages. Everybody can do that. I can do that in a second. But it doesn't achieve anything, in my opinion. I want people to feel better when they hear my songs than start wondering about, well, maybe I should kill myself or something.
I think if I can just add to that, because I grew up with Ken's music, and it's really interesting. If you listen to the lyrics, I read the lyrics as much as I listen to the music, and in a lot of them there are challenges to the listener to get out there and you know, I challenge you all to go out and do more with yourself, and it's even from way back in the late 60s, Ken was writing about, you know, make something more of what you've got, and it's something that stuck with me a lot.
Yeah, I will say this, it's interesting that you picked on the word fantasy, because I'm in the process of a big study of the material conflict between reality and fantasy.
Okay.
And in order to achieve this study, I've personified each of the two things. So reality is a person, and fantasy is a person. And I look at it as, can these two people live together? And it's produced some really amazing self-examination in me, because I live with a lady, my wife, who is absolutely reality.
Okay.
And I am absolutely fantasy. And it's such an interesting thing to study. But I also remember back when I was 5 years old. No, I was a bit older than that. But we used to take the number 53 bus to school in the early days. It went across the common to the school. And I remember when I was very young, I wanted to be a bus driver. And so we had a little red rubber ring, which we used in the bath. You know, it was the thing you play a toy. But it became my steering wheel. And I would imagine driving the whole route from home to school in the bus. So I already was born with a very, very profound imagination. And so I think that this produced this path to fantasy quite a lot. And I write some songs about real life situations. There's a song on my in my new package, which I'm going to record in January, called When the Bombs Came, which was inspired by all the crap that went on in Syria and Gaza. And it's looked at from a father's point of view, who's lost his entire family because of all this bombing. And that's a very real thing. I very rarely touch on real things like that, but sometimes I do. Majority of my work is produced by my imagination.
Okay. Nowadays, fantasy is perhaps even, I was there in the 70s, but I wasn't quite aware of the fantasy aspect.
Right.
Anyway, now it's huge. And even in music, there are bands who, maybe they're inspired by Uriah Heep even. Do you feel somewhat underrated in that aspect?
No. I mean, I recognize the point you're making is very good, and if, you know, my writing inspired other people directly, great, that's super. You know, I will always only ever be a very small part of musical history, but at least I'll be a part of it. And that's something I'm proud of, and something I'm thankful for and happy about. I don't need to be a superstar, I don't need to be a legend, or I don't need to be any of these things. I'm quite happy with who I am and where I am. But I'm very aware of the fantasy thing, because unfortunately, I see a lot of TV shows. If I'm trying to find a football match, Game of Thrones, and
right,
many copycat lookalikes, video games and things like that are all based around violence.
Yeah.
And I'm so anti-violence, I'm so opposed to violence in every form. But then I try to tune out the visual violence, and I listen to the music that's chosen to accompany these fantasy visualizations. And it's really sad, because not only are the visuals kind of all following the same path, but there's no originality in the music that accompanies them either. So there's a lot of composers out there that are all writing the same thing. This is disappointing to me, because okay. if you have the ability to compose, I feel you should exercise it in the most original way that you can. These guys are writing to a formula which perhaps makes lots of money, and I used to do that in Uriah Heep. They used to say to me, oh, we need another gypsy, we need another lady in black, we need another July morning, which of course is impossible. There's only one of each.
Yeah.
But the thing is, now I'm free to write anything I want to, and I'm writing some of the most interesting things I've ever written in my life. But you know, the music industry and the movie industry has become so formulated, and it's really boring to me.
Okay.
But I can't change that, and I'm not trying to change it. I don't want to change it. People have to change themselves if they want to.
But they are looking for a short-term return.
Of course.
On that investment, there isn't the
investment in originality.
Exactly. No. It's just I have this game. I need music to fit the game, and that's what they do. When Ken was writing and is writing, he's writing from his heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's apart from the fact that it's an incredibly unique skill, it's unusual in today's music industry, I think.
Yeah, and I won't get rich doing it. I mean, it's impossible because the industry doesn't want people like me. I'm lucky that I have a very big fan base all over the world, and that they still want to hear what I have to say, and that's great. That keeps me playing and it keeps me happy. I'm not trying to force anybody to believe me or listen to me or choose me or anything like that. I'm just simply saying, here, this is my latest version of me. What do you think?
Yeah. I realize when you pointed out now that your songs are anti-violent.
Yeah, well, they are.
And it's actually obvious.
They really are.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's passion in them.
Yeah.
There is love in them. There is fear in them. But there is honesty in all of them. And that's something that you can't take away from any of those songs. It doesn't matter what you write about, if you're writing honestly, it's a fantastic
thing. And I also use my songs sometimes to ask myself questions too. You know, because I still don't fully understand everything, and I will never fully understand everything. And sometimes I do things or say things or feel things that I don't understand. And so I use my songs to discuss those kinds of situations. When I said earlier that, you know, this lady from Switzerland who's a writer, and she writes sweet poetry, but female poetry, which is tends to be more about butterflies and birds and flowers than about, you know, anything what I call substantial stuff. She really was concerned about this writer's block thing, and I just said, write about it, because it's simple.
Yeah.
You know, you can just sit down and say, I don't know why it is, but somehow today I don't feel inspired. I don't feel anything, there's anything for me to write about, and I really can't understand why that is. You've already written something. You no longer have writer's block. You know, it's just this mentality that people have where they feel, I'm a writer, therefore something must come to me every day.
Well, no, it must be epic.
But I mean, it's not a fact. I mean,
but your example was...
Sorry?
Your example was... on the point there, I mean, I wake up every day with no songs to play. Yeah.
Exactly, and that's exactly how that song came around, was because I just didn't feel inspired. And it was at a period in time when I was forced to come up with new songs all the time because the band was recording a new album every 9 or 10 months, which I thought was ridiculous, but, you know, it kind of put pressure on me to produce, you know.
Yeah, that was the... shall I say, golden period of Uriah Heep in the...
I think if you talk to all of the fans, if you're coming to Tavastia tomorrow, ask that question of all of those people, they will agree with you. That late 60s to mid 70s was absolutely golden period. If you go to a show, and I have seen the current band on a couple of occasions, 50% of their set list is Ken created stuff, but the band only has one original member.
Yeah. So,
which is,
and the band that will be tomorrow night, the Legends, actually has three original members. Yeah. So we have more original members than the band called Uriah Heep.
That's right.
It's a small point.
I won't go into all the details. I can get this.
They're out there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. But you did a breakup with Uriah Heep, and was it 1980? And I more or less know the what led to that. But
it was just when Gary died, the band, the magic was gone. The chemistry from the band was so powerful that when you took away one element of that chemistry, it weakened the band tremendously. It weakened the band musically as well, because Gary was an incredible bass player, by far the best musician in the band.
Okay.
That followed David becoming an alcoholic, and this weakened the band even more, because David was such an important part of the band. He was the front man, the mouthpiece, the voice, the communicator. And so this really weakened the band. At this point, I was so disillusioned with the whole thing, and I asked the manager if I could leave. I said, I really want to leave. I really don't want to do this anymore, because every time we replaced somebody, it became like a caricature of the original band. It sort of kind of sounded a little bit like the original band, but it didn't feel like it at all. There was no soul there. There was no spirit. It was a machine. And so as this progressively went on and we kept replacing people and so on, so the band became less and less like itself. And so in the end, finally, they hired a singer, which I totally disagreed with. And I just gave up. I just said, nah, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I've always been like this in my life. I will quit doing something, even though I have no idea what I'm going to do next, which is really stupid. I mean, you should plan a bit better than that, but I'm too spontaneous for that. And I gave up, and I just called a meeting and said, bye-bye, I don't want to do this anymore, and see ya. And I didn't leave Uriah Heep. I left a band called Uriah Heep.
Okay, yeah. Then I must ask about your time in Blackfoot, which for me seems kind of unlikely. A colleague of mine said you definitely have the looks, but an English bloke in a American southern rock band. How did that come about?
It didn't work at all. Musically, it was very difficult for me. They were fun guys. Ricky and Jackson were fun, crazy guys. But musically, it didn't work for me. I got a call from their manager saying, we want to put keyboards on the new Blackfoot album. Would you be willing to do it? And I flew to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and met them and said, yeah, okay, let's do it. But for me, I was trying to fill a gap left by Uriah Heep, and that was never going to happen. So I was clutching for something, and it didn't work. Okay. I tried to make it work, and it didn't work. And in the end, after I got the call that David had died, that's when I decided to leave Blackfoot. But it was not a very satisfying time for me. You say unlikely. That's a very kind word. It was okay. A disaster.
I remember one classmate of mine. He had the album with "Send Me an Angel." And I looked at the credits and saw Ken Hensley, I knew you were right. From Uriah Heep, but I didn't know if it was the same guy. Yeah. But I actually liked the song, I remember.
Yeah, it was a good song. I liked the song. I wrote two songs for Blackfoot that I liked. I co-wrote some other things with them, but Teenage Idol was an interesting song. Send Me an Angel, I think, was a good song. Would have been a great song for Uriah Heep, I think.
Yeah. Well,
but just overall, it just wasn't a very good time for me musically. It was I was a bit lost, to be honest.
Then I have maybe one last question. Then I read somewhere, I think it was actually Blackie Lawless who has said something about your work in Uriah Heep being the blueprint for heavy metal keyboards. But you also play the guitar and some other instruments, I guess. Which is the more important instrument in rock?
Well, that really rather depends. I can't give you a straight answer to that question, sadly, because every instrument I play means something important to me.
Okay.
First of all, it's important to understand that I do not consider myself, and I know the words that Blackie used, and I'm thankful for his kind words and everything. Blackie, one of the most interesting people I've ever met in the music business. But I don't consider myself to be a great keyboard player or even a good keyboard player. People like Rick Wakeman are great keyboard players. People like John Lord was a great keyboard player. For me, musical instruments have always been tools I use to write with. So therefore, I've never studied the art of playing. I've never wanted to be a virtuoso. I've never learned to read or write music in the formal way. I just play my own way and primarily use piano and acoustic guitar for writing songs. Okay. The Hammond is an instrument I love to play and which I feel I can play well and effectively in a rock and roll environment. There's a lot of things you can do with a Hammond that are not strictly musical. They're more sound-oriented and effects-oriented. And I'm always happy when I'm behind a Hammond organ. Always very happy because I'm very comfortable and confident there. And comfortable enough to experiment and still learn. But I've never become a virtuoso. So as far as I'm concerned, which instrument I choose depends on the kind of song I'm writing.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the lyrics will suggest to me a melody, and once the melody starts to float into my head, then I instantly know that I need to go to one instrument or the other. Very rarely do I use both for one song, although occasionally I do that.
So you consider yourself, your songwriting is more important than the
I am primarily a songwriter.
Right, yeah.
I am first and foremost a songwriter, and everything else came from that and still comes from that.
Yeah, okay. Can you name your favorite song then, or one of them?
Of my own?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, no. I mean, I have something like 350 songs in my publishing catalog, and I like so many songs for so many reasons. I mean, I like Rain for one reason. I like July Morning for another reason. I like some of my more recent songs, like Beyond the Stars, which I recorded with Live Fire. I like some of the songs on Trouble are extremely interesting because I was in trouble at the time. Not serious trouble, but personal trouble, conflict. And so I wrote these things with my tongue in my cheek, as we say in English, you know. And so some of those songs amused me, and some of the newest things that which I'm writing now, which I'm working on, are also extremely interesting. So I guess I would say Paradise to Spell is a highlight because it was a high point in the band's musical career. Rain, July Morning, Lady in Black, obviously, because it just sits such a simple song, but such a huge worldwide hit. So yeah, there's a lot there.
Okay, yeah, thank you. One more thing then, you partly have answered it, but does it ever get tiresome when people on your concerts nowadays only want to hear those classics?
No, not at all. I mean, I enjoy playing those songs, and it's more amazing to me. I'm still just amazed that these little songs that I wrote so many years ago just mean so much to so many people. And when I start playing a song like July Morning or something, and I see the look on people's faces and the reactions, I see them laugh, I see them cry, I see them smile, I see them grab each other because it brings back memories to them. And I've known so many stories of people who have danced to these songs, they met to these songs, they got married with these songs. I mean, I know so many stories of that something that means so much to them, the ones who made my career. No, I can't get tired of that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.